time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
They don't look scared in the Crown Victoria.
Yeah, they're laughing.
These guys aren't laughing.
Where?
In the country square.
What does it matter what they're doing in other cars?
I want to know how scared I should be.
Life is good, Jack. As long as the children are here, we're safe.
May the days be endless. Let the seasons drift. Do not advance the action according to a plan.
Okay, so Adolf Hitler studies or Elvis Presley studies. It's a tough call if you're trying to work in academia in the 1980s, particularly American academia, at the College on the Hill, or even the College on the Hill. Mark Kermode definitely didn't like this movie. I don't know. I think there were certain aspects of biting satire that are well equipped to actually lead us into, obviously, the key academic development of the 21st century, which, of course, is going to be Harry and Meghan studies. But before we turn on to that, let's go to Richard Fitzwilliams and find out whether it was all just white noise and people just talking over other people and just generally not taking any attention of any life situations whatsoever, because that white noise is there even if you've got a toxic waste dump just outside your town.
Well, I have to say it is a very unusual movie, and it wasn't at all what I'd expected. Billed as an absurdist comedy. I mean, that is precisely what it is. Now, I mean, from my point of view, I love Greta Gerwig, Noah Baumbach, The Squid and the Whale. Oh, yes. I mean, a marvellous director. And here he's taken a novel by Don DeLillo and, yes, starring Adam Driver, Greta Gerwig, John Cheadle, what you might say is not to love. You have to like the zany to really appreciate this movie, especially the last part of it. In the 1980s, Jack Gladney, played by Adam Driver, he's a professor of Hitler studies, which is a field that he's personally invented.
But he can't speak German, Richard. He can't speak German.
Why should he, after all? I mean, think of the depth. He hasn't had time. He's been
ich
so...
Ich esse Kartoffelsalat. Ich esse Kartoffelsalat.
Well, I have to say, I mean, the parts of this are very funny. And I mean, we meet his fourth wife, Babette, and he's got four children too. So he's got quite a lot on his plate, especially as he has dreams of mysterious figures trying to bump him off. And his colleague, Murray, who's played by Don Cheadle, he is a professor of Elvis studies. And briefly, they're in competition. It's a very funny scene. I mean, you have to... The point with this movie...
Team teaching at its finest, Richard. I mean, that's the way I would have ideally liked to develop most of my classes at the University of Lincoln, really. Both academics speaking about different things to the same enraptured group of students. Natasha Wanton would have very much have appreciated that, probably even more so than my Monty Python sequence.
Oh, I don't think I could have topped your Monty Python sequence, Alex. That was something quite special.
I mean, you need Natasha to see this particular scene where these two professors, the Hitler studies and the Elvis studies, are trying. I mean, it is probably the way, it is the highlight of the movie. I mean, it's very funny, except that we then get start going into the realms of the surreal and the absurd. It's in the last part that it really goes off the rails a bit, but there is a cataclysmic train accident that casts a cloud of chemical waste over their town. So in America, it's a massive evacuation, and who can escape, who can't, what instructions come over. The families try, but of course it just so happens that Jack has been exposed to waste. So what does this mean? This means a fear possibly of what may happen to him. I have to say that the scenes, the disaster scenes and the chaotic scenes and how this works out, I on a totally different level, it's quite realistic. And I do prefer the more realistic approach rather than the zany approach. It's just me. And I mean, I found them rather fascinating, but not necessarily absolutely as hilarious as, well, some people will find the last part of this movie involving atheist nuns and shopping and all sorts of strange, quirky things. I mean, the performances...
Just throw in the kitchen sink, why don't you? It's National Lampoon's Academic Vacation.
I mean, did you enjoy this movie, Alex?
In a bizarre way, yes, but that's probably because I'm used to obviously seeing the serendipitous nature of academia juxtaposed with the real world in a kind of Noam Chomsky-esque manner.
Good answer, I have to say. One has also to remember Baumbach's so good at examining human relationships, but looking at them seriously. And I'm thinking of Marriage Story. I'm thinking of Frances Ha. I'm thinking of The Squid and the Whale. And Greta Gerwig is so sensitive too, with Frances Ha and Mistress America and other movies. It's, do you find chaos funny? Well, to some extent, it's the way it's handled here. You get rather much of it. I wasn't expecting this sort of movie, and the summoner gets rather excited the moment they hear that there's a movie by Noah Baumbach starring Greta Gerwig. I didn't get what I expected. Having said that, those who like this sort of thing will undoubtedly find a lot that they will appreciate, that certainly in the more absurdist scenes, I did not so much. But out of loyalty to the two of them, I would recommend it to those who enjoy this sort of movie.
I'm sensing you're probably going to go for a 6 out of 10 for this one, Richard. I don't expect that it actually floated your boat in the same way that the vehicle wasn't really floating when it was actually in the creek, and people didn't even really appreciate what was going past them. Again, a metaphor for contemporary life ripped from the 1980s.
You've told me what I was about to say, Alex.
Well, I like to see that we're reading from the same script, because reading from the same script is critical, is it not, Sarah Huntley?
Absolutely. Sorry about my late...
It's always important that you're fashionably ready to actually arrive, because Natasha, who's actually over the last vacation period, actually had accommodation in 5 separate places in the Northern Hemisphere and is now exhausted back in Australia. But obviously the camera doesn't come on at this particular moment in time, because quite rightly, she needs to take some time to work through that. And after all, as I've said frequently, it is radio. So let's not worry about that.
But you can see, I'm not worried. I'm not worried. Hey, I'm going to look better in about 2 hours' time, but not at the moment.
Well, that's OK. Natasha, from what we've said, will you be checking out White Noise?
This one is a bit of a wild card for me. So out of the two movies that we're going to speak about this evening, the other one is definitely a safe bet. This one for me, so I do, to answer Rich's question, do I find chaos funny? I think it depends upon 2 things. I think it depends upon who I watch it with and their reaction alongside it. And I think it also depends upon how it actually plays out in the movie, so the subject of the matter. I think a movie like this, I do like Adam Driver. I find him very interesting. I the way that he sort of sells characters, I find appealing. So I feel like in a movie like this, where it's kind of a bit out there, you kind of need the leading character to sell it well, to be believable that he's really that character. I don't know. I feel like I would either really love it or I'd really hate it. I would give it a go. But if I really hate it, I could see it going off in like 20 minutes in the first 20 minutes. So I think it would really just depend when I sat down to watch it.
Well, I have to say that it does actually feature a bodily function scene in the sort of 20, 25 minutes, etc. So don't worry, Natasha, it's not like 15
American
minutes of vomit.
Humor.
I know, but it's there. And of course, you have to kind of stop saying to yourself, oh, it's Steve Coogan, when of course you're looking at Adam Driver on screen, because they look very similar. It could almost be one and the same. Aha!
Alex, I do have to ask you, on the subject of bodily functions, which you bring up from time to time, whether you have yet caught up, after my warnings, with Triangle of Sadness.
15 minutes, it's worthwhile, you know, 900 seconds. You just have to effectively watch behind the sofa, as you used to do in the good old days of Doctor Who. Sarah, you may not have actually followed the whole set, or you may have actually seen White Noise and actually accessed it via the delights of what I refer to as Meghan and Harry flicks these days. Sarah, is White Noise something for yourself, do you think?
No, I haven't seen White Noise, but you did say something that alerted me that I might like it, is that do I find chaos funny? Yes, I do. I think I find English chaos probably more funny than American chaos, because it's more, usually it's a bit more believable.
There's no real American equivalence to Jacob Rees-Mogg, is there, at the end of the day? I mean, you know, they might try with Kevin McCarthy, you know, election after election after election after election. He finally got the job 25 times in. But, you know, Jacob Rees-Mogg, somehow it's another little level, isn't it, really?
I mean, American chaos here, by the way. I mean, it is very much a movie that I can't see being made here with quite this particular angle to it. But I wonder how you would, Sarah, take the last part of it, where you really, really, it is absolutely absurdist. I mean, it's bizarre.
I just call it Carry On Professor. That's all we need to do.
I think for me, what I like is, because I'm a bit British and not American, is... you know, a farce is a suspended belief in reality, isn't it? So a really good play farce sets off and then it gets more and more ridiculous, which is why you have joined them on the journey. If this one doesn't start at that level, I'll be fine. If it starts at that level, then I can't get my head around it to start with.
Well, it depends how you actually view the first day of academic years, basically, and seeing the trailer, observation humour and various other bits and pieces. It's an interesting take. However, sir, I have to warn you, at no point at any of the entire running order of White Noise do we hear those immortal words, which I know you love, "More tea, Vicar." So it goes. Meanwhile, those of us who actually occasionally like to keep abreast of what's happening in the Red Top Press, specifically the Daily Express, might this week have actually been surprised to actually find, or perhaps not surprised, that under the following line, "Buckingham Palace and Kensington Palace have so far declined to comment on the claims made in Harry's book, but royal expert Richard Fitzwilliams has warned that the royal family may be forced to act sooner rather than later. He exclusively told express.co.uk, the royal family do not intend to respond to the allegations in Harry's memoir. However, their hand may be forced. It's too early to tell. The sheer outrageousness of the claims and the malign nature of the memoir will harm the royal family, though a great many may wonder how rational Harry is. King Charles will hope the strategy of silence is sustainable. The coronation is in May and will be magnificent, and royal tours will undoubtedly be announced too." Now, Richard, I just wanted to ensure that was actually a direct quote from yourself, exclusively given to express.co.uk, and presumably your Spanish, esto es un robo, sí señor, has actually up to speed, so you could actually access the joys of en la sombra, in the shadow, because obviously there's no Spanish equivalent to spare, is there? You know, so let's just clarify that before we go into a discourse on this particular matter.
Well, Alex, it's a very important point, I have to say, because what you're humorously referring to has caused very, very serious problems in with the press, because as everyone, I think, probably will know, there was a Guardian exclusive on the fact that William supposedly allegedly assaulted Harry in 2019. Somebody got hold of a book there. Now, there was also apparently People magazine got hold of a book. They have links or had links with Meghan's friends, and indeed there were quotes from that letter she wrote to her father in People. Those two were rather strange, but what happened in Spain was absolutely bizarre, because apparently in advance of a public holiday, booksellers permitted copies.
You've got to have something to compete with Kate's birthday, haven't you, really? You know, let's get it out there. Let's put the message in from that point of view. But before we go any further, I just have to say, first of all, a little kind of apology for me, really, because I apologise to Meghan, because I really do feel for the lady now. I think it must be dreadful. How can you cope when you find out that you've actually been married to a mass murderer? You know, somebody who is a confessed mass murderer of 25 fellow human beings on the planet, and clearly has major issues there. And also, even more problematic, what about the dogs when they discovered that their bowl had been shattered? I mean, the stress factor of the canines alone is very problematic. And don't get me started on the fact that he actually refers to his first, shall we say, romantic interlude in a field as being one in which his ass, A-double-S, was actually spanked, not arse. Surely the British version has to be the later, I mean, if only for farcical purposes, farce, arse, as opposed to ass. So those are my initial sort of lines on the text, etc. I mean, I realise Natasha might be sort of jaw-droppingly sort of staggered by these revelations at present, but we'll come to her in a few moments. Richard, have you read Spare? Are you going to be adding to the coffers of the Sussexes by actually buying, well, not what, what, buy 10 copies, basically, so you can burn 9 and keep one?
Well, here you are. I've just received an email to tell me my copy will be with me tomorrow, and which I ordered. But of course, I must or may try and get hold of another in another way. You are familiar with the fact, and of course, this is a problem, that the translation of English into Spanish has already led a lot of papers to be very carefully with their quotes. Having said that, and the facts are also...
I don't know what the Spanish is for ass or arse. I'm confused.
Well, if you saw Giles Brandreth, there's a Carol Vorderman posted on Twitter, an absolutely hilarious interlude with Brandreth talking about the Harry losing his virginity in the field behind a pub and what happened, and they were roaring.
I mean, surely she should be the Duchess of Sussex, you know? I mean, what's happened to this mysterious female that, you know, needs to actually be there? She should have been the precursor to Meghan. She should have been part of the royal family.
Alex, I'm surprised you haven't discoursed sympathetically on the issue of penile frostbite.
Yeah, but you see, again, you know, sometimes there's just too much information that you can go into in terms of this. Actually, I do feel that the ghostwriter must have actually been very strained not to burst into fits of laughter when he's actually taking these notes down from, obviously, Harry, who clearly, actually, on a serious note, probably deserves compassion, because I would suggest that actually, you know, the revelations that we see here do suggest, shall we say, a slightly disturbed state of mind.
Oh, there's no question at all about that. But, and of course, that there are reasons for it. And of course, again, a large amount of the book, I understand, is devoted to both the trauma that he suffered when his mother died and also how he came to terms with it. But the problem, I mean, there's so much information I have in front of me, so many papers.
Well, he should be booted out of America forthwith. I mean, he's done drugs. He's lied. Right. If he's basically, you know, he shouldn't. If John Lennon was effectively booted out of the States, etc., surely, you know, Harry should actually go as well. I mean, you're not allowed to become a resident if you've actually got a history of drug abuse.
But Alex, don't you talk to Binns?
To Binns?
Binns. When Harry was on Magic Mushrooms, he talked to a bin. The bin assumed a head.
No, I talked to squirrels, but not bins.
These are strange experiences to share.
And I don't inhale.
I accept that, of course. But one of the problems, seriously, with this book, which is causing havoc, I suspect, at Buckingham Palace, there's no doubt that some of the allegations in it are very, very unfortunate and very serious and very hurtful. The Sussexes say they want privacy. What privacy do they give Charles? What privacy do they give William, most particularly, who's in the line of fire? Because the theme of this book...
Or Kate, who apparently encouraged Harry to dress up as a Nazi.
Well, there's so much, there are a whole series of allegations of various arguments between, or unpleasantnesses between Meghan and Kate, and of course between the brothers. What I didn't know, or at least I don't think it was generally known, and certainly this wasn't the picture the palace wanted painted, was the fact that I frequently referred to the tragedy of the inseparable brothers falling out. Well, it seems to me they were far from inseparable, that from the very, very start, which is, of course, the reason the book was entitled Spare, Harry strongly resented his brother's future and also his brother's position. And
but so did King John when Richard went off to fight for the Crusades. There is a history of this.
There is indeed a history of it, and one of the problems, and I think it manifests itself in petty ways, that when he had a room, William had a room that was larger, and when they had not cot in Kensington Palace grounds, look at the very grand flat that Cambridge has had, and so on and so forth. That throughout the book, you've got, according to the extracts I've read, you've got this theme of resentment, of anger, and yes, therapy, the drug abuse, a variety.
Mass murder.
Well, I mean, with reference to that, it was an irresponsible thing to say, because the problem we all know he was a brave soldier, and indeed the 10 years in the army was supposed to have been his salvation, and not entirely, as you gather from this book, the need to let everything hang out, the need also to make life extremely difficult for the royal family that he knows can't hit back, yet all their big contracts, this is about money fundamentally, as well as his personal angst, are because they're royal. But with reference to the point about the kills in his second tour of duty, which was an Apache co-pilot and gunner, the real problem with this is talking about them like play like chess pieces and so on. I mean, that may be the way the military come to terms with it, in the sense that you're taking life. But to put it in a book and put the number, there are those who believe that I did a piece on this for the Mail, who believe that this is possibly a tactic, whereas he wants security when he's in Britain and doesn't believe the Home Office is providing it. He can bring his own, but he doesn't believe it's comparable to police protection, and he's offering to pay for police protection, though he lost it.
But Salman Rushdie had a fatwa just by actually writing one or two things about the Satanic Verses. Here we have somebody who has actually self-admittedly killed 25 human beings. And again, I would have thought is being extremely naive, indeed, if not mentally unstable in terms of saying this. Sarah, coming to yourself briefly, I mean, my only thought on this is that given that we also lost Pope Benedict the 16th last week as well, somebody who actually wrote the very scholarly text, Caritas Est, God is Love, that actually the only thing we can actually usefully do with respect to Harry is, I mean, he needs compassion, he needs help, and probably needs some psychological counselling as well. But your thoughts, Sarah?
Well, I'm very cynical. I think the whole thing is a money-making exercise for him and Meghan. And I think cynically, it's reached its peak. And I almost wonder whether him and his publicists in America have sat down and thought, when is the worst time to publish this to cause the most chaos possible? He probably didn't know at the time that the coronation was going to come up. But looking into the future, everyone's going to get very bored with it. So he's managed to sensationalize even further on matters which every person in their life has issues and problems, and he doesn't look at how privileged he actually is. But then you could argue his mental health state is so shot to pieces, he needs help. So I'm not without kindness, but, you know, what did the Pope... I'm not particularly averse, I don't like popes particularly, but the Pope went off and he retired. He didn't then say, what are you all going to do for me? He spent those years... You know, part of life is finding a purpose, and finding in helping others you gain. And in, I know that if I didn't have people in my life, I'd feel bereft. I love, I'd probably bore people to bits, but I have to have special people like my friends on this program. So I'm very angry with him, and I think although he does have mental health issues, I think it's all about making money. And personally, I think what will happen is there'll be a huge crash and loads more nastiness come out. I hope the royal family manage to have the guts to stay quiet, because you always win the situation by doing that personally. And then he will look the stupid one when the king says, do you want to come to the coronation after all this? Because if he chooses to come to the coronation, then he chooses to live by how we are in this country. But I'd be interested to know what Americans think, whether because he's married to American, they're more pro. I don't know, but I just want to get him and say, look at other people. I mean, what their lives, they don't stand up and say this isn't fair. They just get on with it. He needs to get on with it. And they've got more than enough money to live the rest of their lives. And lots of people in this country don't have that.
Natasha Walton, from your own perspective, do you feel as though he should be tried for war crimes immediately? Or is it a case of, again, first world problems? Or is it a case of, rather like myself, you think, but what about the dog when they lost their bowl? They lost the bowl, it was shattered into pieces when the RAF knocked the army on its back.
Oh, the poor, poor dogs. no, I think I'm like Sarah. I think that maybe there's an element of like cynicism in my thinking, and you sort of wonder how much of it is actually coming from him. There's two sides that you could take it, really. He either does genuinely believe this thoroughly, and in which case he probably does need some help, and then you've got the other aspect of it where he's kind of looked at it quite kind of financially, and he's gone, how much can I kind of put out to scandalize people, whether or not he believes that to that extent or not, or whether, you know, how much of it is true. And he's just sort of thought, oh, this will shock and this will titillate, and, you know, how much he's decided to shove that in from a financial perspective. So it's interesting that there's two avenues to possibly look at it. Did he choose his timing? Yes, I agree with Sarah that probably there is definitely an element of that in terms of when can we drop this to cause money. And yes, it is about money. That money is the bottom line with it. And it will sell. That's the thing. People have been waiting for this for a long time. It's going to sell. A lot of people are going to read it. Now,
will you be buying a copy, Natasha?
No, I will not.
I won't be buying a copy, I have to say. Sarah, will you be buying a copy?
Definitely not, no.
But I think Richard, it'll be interesting.
It's a complimentary
to see...
copy for yourself.
Well, then I've ordered one, as I say, and I'm in the position where I actually get two. You don't know, but I mean, it's a question of having to broadcast on, firstly, his interview tonight. We haven't mentioned briefly that he's giving, I think it's three.
Yeah, but that's with Tom Bradby. He's so anti-Harry, it's not true, basically. I mean, he'd probably actually start going into Steptoe and Son, though, too.
As you know perfectly well, Tom Bradby and Harry...
How do you feel after all this? How do you feel after all this? Thank you for asking. Nobody's asked me. How do you feel?
Yes, this, of course, was what he asked Meghan, and indeed it was when she answered in South Africa that the world knew that there was not only a rift the brothers confirmed, with Harry confirmed with his brother, but also that she was extremely unhappy. I mean, it is quite extraordinary.
Maybe she just found out she'd been married to a mass murderer, as I said.
Well, I mean...
It's like Rose and Frederick West in the Royals.
What we've got here is a situation for King Charles where the idea, I mean, for example, he hasn't sent the invitation to the coronation yet, and just think if one didn't arrive. When it arrives, that will also bring up the issue of security, but what he wants is accountability. What he believes is that the way he's been treated is so appalling, he and Meghan have been treated, been briefed against as well as being snubbed.
And yet no mention of racism whatsoever in any of the book, as far as I can see.
But Alex, are you wanting to use up all the ammunition now?
Well, Meghan's got her book as well, clearly, so...
Meghan has got a book, and that's the next instalment. And the answer is, I fear, because every trailer, what was said, all of this has been picked up. Every single word he utters gets discussed in the press. At the moment, there will be an end to this at some point, simply because it can't continue, obviously, absolutely ad nauseum forever. But that is quite a long time coming, and there is a four-book contract with Random House. I think it's $20 million has been mentioned, so it's not as large as the $100 million.
And this is not going to charity, obviously. This is going to the Sussexes' personal sort of routine. So it's nice to see that they're doing something to obviously sustain themselves as they look to actually maintain their Montesino mansion. I think
not
we've actually
being
probably
funny though, but like, what else have they got to write about? Like, they've written four books. If Harry's written his memoirs, and obviously Meghan's written hers, what are they going to do for the last two? Are they going to bring out a cookbook? Like, I don't understand.
I wouldn't be surprised. You never know. Cooking with stress. You know, it will roll and roll and roll and roll. They will eke every penny they can out of this.
Well, they will, Natasha. It's a very good idea, and indeed, I think you were referring to Meghan being a foodie in her blog, which was closed down. I think it's 3 or 4 years ago now, called The Tig, and that you'd like to read more, and perhaps you personally would. You know, would subscribe to a podcast and perhaps could contribute a recipe.
I'd rather read a cookbook than the memoirs, but I don't think either are going to be on my bucket list, to be honest, Richard.
I mean, the problem with this, by the way, and just for a serious, if I may, Alex, it's one thing that there is so much hostility in Britain. This they knew and have known for a long time, that their poll ratings are abysmal, that they're at war with the press. All of this is known. The really significant aspect, I'm afraid, is that this wasn't intended for a British audience at all, really. They're interested in the United States, They're interested in the wider world. It is true there is more cynicism in the United States towards them. And the wider world, I don't know. We've only seen a few comments that I, or at least that I've seen, because we're so submerged with endless details about what Catherine and Meghan said, with that Meghan said she had a bird brain and talked about her hormones, about lip gloss, for example, Alex. There's a serious matter. I mean, this is something that happened at Trooping the Colour for the Platinum Jubilee celebrations, when Meghan wanted to borrow Catherine's lip gloss, and she didn't particularly want to lend it, but did. And then this was the way Meghan used it that caused her to look rather appalled. So, you know, there are all these sensitivities. And one of the odd things, and which is sad, Prince Philip's funeral, stories now emerging about that, that there was so violent an argument between the brothers, again, and more discussion of William seizing Harry this time.
Abel and Cain, isn't it, really? You know, they haven't quite reached that stages yet, but maybe that's because, you know, that they haven't actually found the right implements.
Well, I mean, one can only say that it's, you can see Charles saying, don't make my last years a misery. The trouble is that he's portrayed overall, though there are kinder bits, as someone who isn't particularly decisive, isn't particularly affectionate. But then, you know, does Harry need to say that the tragic occasion when Charles told him of Diana's death, that he patted him on the leg but didn't hug him? And then that becomes the subject of end. Every single thing, whether serious and, you know, how the walking behind the coffin when he was only 12, to arguments.
Would he not have been more upset if he hadn't been alive to take part in the actual service?
Well, I mean, the point apparently is Alf Spencer thought it was barbaric that the boys of 12 and 15 should be asked to walk. The tradition that we knew was that, or the story we knew was that the Duke of Edinburgh said, I'll walk if you do. But to what extent? I mean, this was a very big moment for the royal family, and there's no question at all that it passed international law and Harry is deconstructing it. But there's absolutely no doubt that being unable to weep himself and greeting crowds of mourners who were crying. And
well,
so
at least he can investigate his mother's death, because obviously he's convinced that it was murder, so he's obviously going to be exploring that as well, which is another sort of aspect.
That is an extremely serious thing, and that he and William wanted a reopening into what happened. I mean, I covered the inquest. It was a drunk driver on drugs speeding.
No, Richard, it was an alien from another dimension who wished to actually veer off the course of history and create an alternate timeline. This is evidently established. It's why we're having this Zoom call now. Tragically, we're unable to really focus on Corsage, of which there are five movies actually focusing on this particular character from history. But you have 2 or 3 minutes if you want to actually explain why you would give this a 10 out of 10.
I would like, Alex, to deal with it sensibly when I've got time to do so, and also to discuss its merits when, as you know, we have a bit of spare time. So I prefer to leave it.
But spare time for spare, surely there's always going to be spare time for spare. That is going to be undoubtedly the book of the year in every sense of the word, really.
Oh, no, it's selling. I mean, 750,000 copies have sold in Britain so far, I understand.
Ka-ching.
We'll have to see with the royal response, the nuclear fallout that could occur. If you look at what Palace could
surely do, they don't have the red button in Buckingham Palace. They can't press it. That would end everything. Leave that to Putin, another well-balanced individual.
They intend to say nothing. On the other hand, they could strip them of their dukedom, but not the palace can't. That's an act of parliament. And there's no current act, the Titles Deprivation Act, refers to aristocrats who fought for
It is beginning to look, Richard, more and more as though my ultimate solution, as suggested a few years ago, actually, when the marriage took place, of basically Meghan and Harry basically going off together with Prince Andrew to live in Beijing, is more and more likely to be the best solution for all, because President Xi would welcome them, I'm sure.
I think what you could get is a nuclear option. Hopefully it wouldn't need to be used, but I notice in today's papers it is mentioned the Sussexes have a 25-page rebuttal to any bullying allegations that just might emerge, because last year the report that the palace finally investigated these, that was not published. Equally, we know very well that
If it involves lip gloss, Richard, I'm not surprised, because that can obviously be the tipping point in so many ways. But for the moment, having outlined a lot of white noise, and that's just Harry's book, and of course the movie White Noise, we wrap up this particular sequence. We will be featuring Corsage in the very near future, but to Natasha Wanton, currently back in Australia, to Sarah Huntley and to Richard Fitzwilliams, well, keep watching the movies and reading the royal memoirs.
Grab your coat and let's start walking.